Such views have become commonplace among African Americans, and they are routinely promulgated in multicultural textbooks. Interestingly, Franklin's criticisms of the founders relies on the same reasoning that Justice Taney relied on in the infamous Dred Scott decision. Writing for the majority in this notorious 1857 case upholding slavery, Taney argued that since several of the founders, including Jefferson, were slave owners, these men could not really have meant that all men are created equal. They may have written all men, but what they really meant was white men. As for black slaves, Taney concluded that they have no rights that the white man is bound to respect. Are Franklin and Taney right? Are the founders guilty as alleged? Let us consider the evidence fairly, beginning with the notorious three-fifths clause to which Franklin alludes. To the modern mind, this is one of the most troubling pieces of evidence against the founders. And yet, it should not be, because the clause itself has nothing to say about the intrinsic worth of blacks. The origins of the clause are to be found in the debate between the northern states and the southern states over the issue of political representation. The South wanted to count blacks as whole persons in order to increase its political power. The North wanted blacks to count for nothing, not for the purpose of rejecting their humanity, but in order to preserve and strengthen the anti-slavery majority in Congress. It was not a pro-slavery Southerner, but an anti-slavery Northerner, James Wilson of Pennsylvania, who proposed the Three-Fifths Compromise. The effect was to limit the South's political representation and its ability to protect the institution of slavery. Frederick Douglass understood this. He called the Three-Fifths Clause a downright disability laid upon the slaveholding states, which deprived them of two-fifths of their natural basis of representation. So a provision of the Constitution that was anti-slavery and pro-black in intent, as well as in effect, is today cited to prove that the American founders championed the cause of racist oppression. Refuting the myth that the Three-Fifths Clause degrades black humanity does not absolve the founders of the charge of hypocrisy. We still have to meet Franklin and Taney's argument that the founders claimed to be anti-slavery while approving a constitution that permitted the continuation of slavery. Despite Jefferson's impressive fulminations against slavery, the fact remains that he owned some 200 slaves and did not free them. Does it not follow that the author of All Men Are Created Equal could not have meant what he said? It should not be surprising that Jefferson, a Virginia planter, owned slaves. In this, he was a man of his time. What is surprising is that as a Southern slave owner, Jefferson made no attempt to justify slavery by contending that it was good for the slave. On the contrary, he repeatedly denounced slavery in the strongest terms. Even if blacks could be shown to be intellectually inferior to whites, Jefferson denied that this would provide a just basis for their enslavement. Whatever be their talents, it is no measure of their rights. Jefferson was one of the least religious of the founders, but strikingly he consistently adopted prophetic biblical language in condemning slavery. I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever. Given Jefferson's firm repudiation of slavery, a view shared by most of the framers, why didn't these men move rapidly to free their slaves and insist upon a constitution that would immediately secure equal rights for all? To answer this question, we must understand something about the relationship between slavery and democracy, and about the practical dilemma faced by the framers in Philadelphia. For millennia, slavery was an accepted part of society. In numerous civilizations, both Western and non-Western, slavery needed no defenders because it had no critics. The major religions of the world, including Christianity and Islam, permitted slavery. True, Christianity and Islam both held that all persons are equal in God's sight. But for centuries, this was considered a spiritual truth, inapplicable to the hierarchies of this world. But starting in the 17th century, certain segments of Christianity, initially the Quakers, then the evangelical Christians, began to interpret biblical equality as forbidding the ownership of one man by another. Only then, for the first time, did slavery become a political problem. Before that, slaves were typically captured in warfare, or bought and sold in slave markets, and the greatest thinkers of antiquity condoned slavery. Aristotle distinguished between those who were slaves by nature, i.e., those who lacked the mental capacity to rule themselves, and slaves by convention, i.e., those who had the misfortune to be captured and enslaved. While Aristotle did not attempt to defend conventional slavery in terms of justice, he did allow it on grounds of expediency. In every society, he said, there is dirty work to be done, and someone has to do it. If slaves do the hard labor, Aristotle theorized, then there would be leisure for others to engage in higher pursuits, like art and philosophy and politics. In his debate with Abraham Lincoln in the mid-19th century, Stephen Douglas offered a version of the Aristotelian argument in defense of the slave system of the American South. The civilized world has always held that when any race of men have shown themselves to be so degraded by ignorance, superstition, cruelty, and barbarism, as to be utterly incapable of governing themselves, they must, in the nature of things, be governed by others, by such laws as are deemed to be applicable to their condition. The careful reader will also recognize in this statement echoes of Plato's argument for why the wise should rule. We might regard Stephen Douglas's argument to be crude and despicable, but Abraham Lincoln did not. He agreed with Douglas. It is absurd to construct a regime in which the foolish are in charge. Thus, democracy poses a problem that the American founders and Lincoln all recognized. How can the wise, who are by definition the few, be reliably identified and chosen to rule by the many? Representative government is based on the hope that the majority will exercise their power on behalf of right, that they will choose others to govern who are wiser than themselves. Yet modern democracy introduces a crucial qualification to the claim of the wise to rule. Such rule is only legitimate when it is vindicated by popular consent. The requirement of consent is necessary to ensure that the wise do not rule simply for their own benefit, but also for the benefit of the unwise. The only distinction between freedom and slavery, Alexander Hamilton wrote, consists in this. In the former state, a man is governed by laws to which he has given his consent. In the latter, he is governed by the will of another. Here we can see what the American founders saw instantly, that the argument for democracy and the argument against slavery are one and the same. Both are based on the political doctrine that no man may rule another man without his consent. Since blacks are human beings, slavery is against natural right and should be prohibited. But how? Here is where Jefferson and the founders faced two profound obstacles. The first was that virtually all of them recognized the degraded condition of blacks in America and understood it posed a formidable hurdle to granting blacks the rights of citizenship. By contrast with monarchy and aristocracy, which only require subjects to obey, self-government requires citizens who have the capacity to be rulers. Jefferson and the founders were legitimately concerned that a group that had been enslaved for centuries was not ready to assume the responsibility of democratic self-rule. Jefferson was also aware of the existence of intense and widespread white prejudices against blacks, which, whatever their cause, seemed to prevent the two people from coexisting harmoniously on the same soil. Madison, who shared this view, developed a plan for the U.S. government to raise money to repatriate blacks to Africa. These so-called colonization schemes seem bizarre today, but in the 18th century they were supported by many abolitionists, white as well as black. Lincoln himself echoed Jefferson's concerns, and prior to the Civil War, he endorsed colonization as a way for blacks to live free and unmolested in a country of their own. The deference of Jefferson and the American founders to popular prejudice strikes many contemporary scholars as an intellectual and moral scandal. Some, like John Hope Franklin, suggest that popular conviction simply represented a frustrating obstacle that the founders should have dealt with resolutely and uncompromisingly. But in a democratic society, the absence of the people's agreement on a fundamental question of governance is no mere technicality.